From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
It's been 9 years since Western news agencies first reported that Libyan security forces had fired on and killed peaceful demonstrators. Those reports set off activity at the United Nations, which resulted in a U.S. bombing campaign against Libya that lasted from February into October. The destruction of Libya by that campaign and by the invasion of ground forces from Al-Qaeda and other jihadi groups freed up foot soldiers and weaponry that spread across the region into Syria and other places. 9 years later, Syria is also devastated and finally turning the tide against the invading forces. On Tuesday, weaponry was found in the harbor in Tripoli that appears to have come back from the Middle East. The ships containing it were bombed by security forces belonging to one of the two groups fighting for control of that country. To make some sense out of all of that, we spoke with Mark Sloboda, analyst based in Moscow, a frequent lecturer at Moscow State University on international relations. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow on Tuesday. So, Mark, 9 years ago on the 17th of February was the first news report, which came through HRW, actually, of claims that the Libyan police and military were firing on peaceful demonstrators. That ended up enabling the war on Libya that ended up destroying Libya. And then, of course, that's around the same time that they started cranking the stuff up in Syria. And now here we are 9 years later, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people displaced, maybe dead. And millions displaced, and the destruction of both countries, pretty much.
It's definitely a travesty, and Libya has been an essentially destroyed country, a failed state ever since, and Syria is well on their way there, but is still occupied by large numbers of jihadis and two foreign powers occupying still large chunks of their country and still have a long fight ahead of them to regain all of their territory and sovereignty.
Let's start with what's happening in Idlib.
The situation in Idlib is since an offensive started on December 19th, the Syrian government has recovered 1,500 square kilometers of territory in Idlib and the adjacent area of West Aleppo.
Wow.
And the most important, it was one of Syria's strategic goals for a long time. They have recovered the full length with room to spare, it seems, of the important M5 highway, which links Syria's two biggest cities, Aleppo and Damascus. Aleppo City was liberated a couple years ago almost. There was still shelling from the outskirts, and the Syrian government basically had to use roads that basically go around a large stretch of desert to reach supply, logistics, everything else. It's not a good connection. Right. Recovering this highway is necessary for national security, for unifying the country, and absolutely essential to begin its economic recovery. Going on 3 years ago, Turkey, which has occupied large chunks of North Syria and is at this point backing, arming, training, supply, salarying, supplying the entirety of what is the jihadi field left over from, the support of the other, its other allies, the U.S., the U.K., Saudi, Qatar, Israel, France, and others. Now it's just Turkey. Turkey's the only one in the game. So they've kind of doubled down on the support of them. And then become estranged from the U.S. as the Trump administration switched the U.S.'s support to doubling down on supporting the Kurds in East Syria, making it a kind of a three-way Mexican standoff between the Syrian government, Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah, Turkey, and the various 31 flavors of jihad, and the U.S. And their Kurdish proxies in East Syria. And the last jihadi stronghold in Syria, held by the jihadis and not directly by the Turkish military, at least, with them as proxies, is Idlib province. And Idlib province is a mountainous territory in northwest Syria, right, you know, along the Turkish border. Was, you know, known for being religiously conservative for a long time, predominantly Sunni, and it has become the, you know, the last redoubt of the regime change war or the revolution, depending on how you term it, against the Syrian government. Now, in the Sochi agreement between Russia and Turkey, acting as the interlocutors for the Syrian government and the jihadis in this occasion, a deal was reached for what was called a ceasefire in Idlib. It has never been any of that, and that's kind of a joke. We'll get to that. But terms of the deal included that extremists, which was never actually defined, and that has always been part of the problem, but was assumed to at least include Al-Qaeda, also known as Nusra at the time, now rebranded as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, and several other groups. Extremists were to be removed from the border areas, and Turkey was responsible for that operation, and they were allowed to place military observation posts in Idlib on Syrian territory, which instead actually became occupation posts that provided intelligence and logistics and cover fire for the various jihadist groups. They were responsible for removing heavy weapons from what was supposed to be a demilitarized zone. They were supposed to separate, again, this eternal thing of separating the extremists from the moderate opposition, which has always been a false situation because, you know, they were have always, from the very beginning, been allied together, essentially making them all extremists. The part of the extended other terms were the securing of the M4 M5 highway for civilian traffic, which was then, you know, probably going to be patrolled by joint Russian and Turkish patrols. Now, the Turkish government accomplished, or, you know, none of this. They didn't even try, of course, but they fulfilled none of these terms. Meanwhile, they accused the Syrian government and Russia of constantly breaking the ceasefire and targeting the opposition. Now, first of all, the terms of the ceasefire never covered Al-Qaeda, HTS, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, and the associated other groups that are pretty much like the Turkestan Islamic Party, Hiras al-Din, that everyone agrees are you know, extremists by any definition. And in those cases, they're also international jihadists. It never applied to them because Turkey could never admit to openly representing them in negotiations or anything like that.
That's a crime of an international crime all by itself, right?
Yeah, and because about a year and a half, 2 years ago, Al-Qaeda / Hayat Tahrir al-Sham completely assumed control of Idlib province. Now, the various jihadi factions had always fought amongst themselves. They fought sometimes for political and ideological reasons, right. Mostly over issues of petty egos, local rent, supply chains, things like this. They had always fought against each other. But in this, Al-Qaeda had established basically a de facto caliphate with complete control over Idlib, and everyone who wasn't there, most of them joined Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, and everyone else still operating under their own original battalions swore fealty to them. And ever since, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham has been literally an entire state province occupied by Al-Qaeda as a de facto caliphate, basically another ICE, another Islamic State. At the time, the Western press was willing to admit all of this, right? They said, oh, Idlib is completely controlled by jihadists, and they actually specifically mentioned it was Al-Qaeda. And the U.S. government itself recognizes that Hayat Tahrir al-Sham is simply Al-Qaeda's local affiliate, rebranded, in an attempt to avoid targeting. You know, they've said as much. And it is recognized as a terrorist organization by the U.S., by the U.K., by the U.N., by Russia, certainly, and even by Turkey, though that has never stopped them from supporting them. So if they're in control of the province, obviously a ceasefire would never work because they are continually attacking West, South, and right. East out of that territory, attempting to expand military Syrian military targets, towns, Christian towns, Russian military bases under constant drone assault. Either Al-Qaeda in Idlib has become one of the world's major drone manufacturers, or they're getting them from somewhere else. So I'll leave you to draw your own conclusions with that. But the Russian air base has been constantly under assaulting out, and so they have constantly been under airstrikes, and then they were completely outside the terms of the deal. And then everyone simply ignores that when the Syrian government or Russia conducts airstrikes against Al-Qaeda, that is not violating the ceasefire because they're literally targeting Al-Qaeda, which controls the entire province. So any idea of a ceasefire is really a joke. But the opportunity was given to Turkey to manage the situation, to bring Al-Qaeda as it was under control, maybe separate from its ranks some of the people who were less ideologically exposed, less ideologically driven, and get rid of the rest. Of course, Turkey has never done this. They have very quietly, but it's been reported on the Turkish press, usually right before the journalists are sent to jail. Turkey now has more journalists in jail than the rest of the world combined.
Amazing.
A NATO member.
NATO, right? Yeah.
They've been supporting, and you occasional catch snippets in Al Jazeera, Turkish troops doing joint patrols, cooperating with Al-Qaeda, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, and everything. So the ceasefire has never worked. And eventually Russia and Syria had, taken care of enough other areas that Idlib was the priority. And since December, they've launched a large offensive that has recovered this territory and secured at least the M5 highway, connecting Aleppo and Damascus, which was one of the original demands of the Sochi. Meanwhile, Turkey is crying bloody blue murder, crocodile tears about civilians being killed. And let's be clear, civilians are being killed, right? This is a military operation, a counter-terrorist operation against a literal Al-Qaeda, a jihadist foe entrenched in urban environments, right? There's going to be collateral damage.
Right.
There was an absolutely enormous collateral damage when the U.S., uninvited, got rid of the Islamic State in eastern Syria, Raqqa, or in western Iraq in Mosul, where at least they were invited. at the time, anyway, and every other city they've done. I mean, the international observers, you know, that usually are quite predisposed towards the U.S. and the West were admitting that, and the UN observers recognized that Raqqa is the most destroyed city in Syria. Right, the U.S. wasn't opening up humanitarian corridors to at least give civilians the opportunity to try to escape out of the bombing area.
What about Libya, by the way, which they bombed for 7 months every day for 11 hours a day?
Yeah, right. Across the board, that is a reality of urban conflict against an entrenched foe, especially a jihadist foe. Right, that is a playing to their advantage. And you are not going to put your troops at risk in such a disadvantageous position. So you use modern firepower, meaning airstrikes, artillery, cruise missiles, what have you, in order, you know, to take out entrenched positions, command and control, all the other locations. But if you read the Western press, they were quite quiet when the U.S. was driving ISIS out of cities in East Syria and West Iraq, but they're calling the Russian military and Assad, of course, always in person, as butchers, as bombers. Everything they hit right. is either a hospital or a market or a kindergarten. Or I guess a stray kitten shelter or something right. like that, at least according to the accounts of right. who? Oh, yeah, Al-Qaeda in control of that right. territory right. or the US-UK-funded Gongo the White Helmets who are somehow embedded with Al-Qaeda and, right. and always have been.
Right.
So I think you can dissuade that. If you take a look at all of the areas that have been recovered by the Syrian government, you want to take a look at Douma, you want to take a look at East Aleppo, in all areas of the rest of the country. Yes, there's been incredible damage. Butchery? Was there genocide? Was there specific targeting of civilians? No. There was enormous collateral damage, as there was in Mosul and Raqqa and everywhere else.
Right.
But these cries are simply because they don't want the Syrian government to win. So they've actually placed themselves in the position of right. defending Al-Qaeda's control arguing for the continued control of an entire state, where they are, of course, raising the next generation of Idlib children to be Al-Qaeda,
right.
Perfecting what they do best, which is terrorism, eventually for export to the rest of the world. Like any rat's nest, like with ISIS and everything else, when they are eventually driven out, remnants of them will scatter,
right.
In Syria and around the world, taking their know-how and those, you know, truly committed to the cause, you know, to spread that elsewhere.
And we're seeing that again today, as a matter of fact. I mean, first of all, one of the things that just to really put this into perspective here, not only are they putting themselves sort of, you know, through, or, I don't know, sleight of word or ideological trickery or accident into the position of defending Al-Qaeda. Let's go back to the original sins. For example, in Libya, where a lot of the arms that were used in Syria originally came from, what happened was the U.S. Air Force and NATO Air Forces operated as the Air Force for Al-Qaeda ground troops to take that country over. In other words, it wasn't some justification of let's leave Al-Qaeda in place after the fact, but an affirmative war conducted with the most advanced weaponry that the West has to place Al-Qaeda in power in Libya and destroy the country on the way, freeing up all of those maniacs to then start roaming the neighborhood, which they did from Mali to Syria. And now we have, just today, Turkey bringing weapons back into Libya from Syria, probably from Idlib.
Yeah, I mean, this is amazing, of course, because in the beginning of the conflict, and in Libya, the U.S. was literally, and France and others, were liberally supporting the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. And look it up, you know, on Wikipedia or, you know, something more reliable. It's an Al-Qaeda affiliate. Right. I mean, that's who they were supporting in Libya. And then, oh, the shock and surprise when Libya, with Gaddafi overthrown, didn't turn into a, you know, an aspiring liberal democratic state, but instead turned into a war-torn, failed state divided among terrorists, Islamist warlords, selling streets, selling slaves on the streets of Benghazi, and you know, finding place in the power vacuum for Al-Qaeda and ISIS and others to emerge in full support there. And you end up with a government in Tripoli that a large portion of that regime is the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, that, I mean, I don't know what they expect in these situations, but of course that is the result. When you support extremists, extremists are going to dominate whatever comes after.
And then if you defend them when they
Ukraine
do,
or,
right, that's right. Yep.
So in the beginning of the Syrian conflict, arms and jihadists, fighters, were flowing from Libya, then successful, to Syria.
Right.
Now we're seeing a reverse flow with arms and jihadists literally and quite openly transported by Turkey and salaried quite handsomely, I might say, by Turkey to do their fighting for them in support of the regime in Tripoli, the Muslim Brotherhood affiliated regime. They're being paid a couple to several thousand dollars a month, and being promised Turkish citizenship afterwards, you know, for doing Turkey's dirty work there. As you know, whether they're Turkish proxies in Syria or Turkish proxies in Libya or in northeastern Iraq, where Turkey also has a permanent incursion at this point, they're best, I think, thought of as Bashi Bazouk, which is an Ottoman Empire term for the irregulars who served basically as the cannon fodder in front of the Ottoman armies, and right. They were awfully simply paid in plunder, right? Whatever you managed to
steal,
to take,
right.
is your pay, and that's a very good way, considering the neo-Ottoman rhetoric that Erdogan and the rest of his administration use when talking in Turkish to his domestic base, and inflaming them up. Everything is littered with references to lands we once owned and peoples who were once ours, and so on. I mean, neo-Ottomanism has become, you know, the official geopolitical ideology of the Erdogan regime, mixed in with his own brand of Islamism, which he is a quite fervent supporter. That's the state in Libya today. And it is directly connected with events in Syria, not only with this cross flow of weapons and fighters, but because of the players involved. The only ones at this point supporting the regime in Tripoli, and they only at this point have control of Tripoli and Misrata, and they're already losing in the suburbs, is Turkey and their patron, Qatar. That's it. Now, on the other side is a very strange amalgamation of forces. If you read the headlines, the first one you're going to see is Russia. And their support in there is actually relatively minor. They definitely do have some security contractors / mercenaries, however you want to term them, providing some training and bodyguard work. They're supporting let's call him what he is, the warlord, the self-styled general of the Libyan National Army, Haftar. Khalifa Haftar, who was at one time one of Gaddafi's generals.
Yes, he was.
And then defected to the U.S. as a CIA asset.
He lived in Langley for a long time, right?
Yeah. He was in the U.S., one of these proxy governments in waiting in Northern Virginia, NOVA. And he was brought back, of course, during the overthrow of Gaddafi. But surprise, surprise, he's actually not thrilled with a Muslim Brotherhood regime controlling his country, and the chaos that ensued after the regime change there. Yeah. And so he became a separate force that was not supported by the United States. The U.S. is kind of sitting this one out, as are the United Kingdom. The Trump administration doesn't really seem to care. They're not interested in Tripoli. The United Kingdom is too involved with its own internal domestic political crises over Brexit and possible another Scottish independence referendum. So the supporters of Haftar are Russia, more importantly, Egypt. The Egyptian government of Sisi is not going to tolerate a Muslim Brotherhood government next to their borders after they just overthrew the Muslim Brotherhood a few years ago. So that's actually the most important country supporting them, because they have a long land border, a large, it should be said, U.S.-supplied military, although they're also cutting deals with the Russians and everyone else now. That they're the most significant player, probably supporting Haftar. Backing Egypt is the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, and by extension, they're also directly supporting Haftar. But as well is France, which still believes it has a colonial legacy.
Right.
In North Africa, and Libya is certainly included in that, but they've decided to back Haftar this time around. And it seems that Russia, in a diplomatic flurry in the last week, has convinced Italy to come out in support of Haftar as well. And the official UN-recognized, West-imposed government, the Muslim now Muslim Brotherhood-affiliated government in Tripoli, is at this point only in control of Tripoli and Misrata, and that's about it. And their days are numbered, despite Erdogan's big talk and several thousand jihadists that he's sent over. There's no sign that that is actually reversing the Libyan regime, or the Tripoli regime's their possibility to stay in power. That meanwhile, back to Syria, Russia and Turkey are in a flurry of diplomatic meetings trying to resolve what's going on in Idlib with the Syrian government's advance. There are now 10 Turkish occupation / observation posts that are surrounded by the Syrian military. The Syrian military and the Turkish military have exchanged direct fire against each other, which they have largely avoided in the 9 years of proxy war up till now. And it is a crisis situation where Erdogan is talking about driving the Syrian army, Syrians, out of Idlib. Turning it back over to Al Qaeda?
They're either conquering territory or they're handing it over to Al Qaeda. Yeah. And what exactly? How much time do you think it's going to take for them to finish clearing out Idlib?
A couple years at least.
Yeah. Huh? So this is not.
They're really entrenched. There's somewhere between Al Qaeda and their friends and the Turkish proxies in uniform. And the Turkish military, there's somewhere between 50 to 100,000 militants in Idlib. They're not going anywhere. They've still got control of the Jarablus Corridor and Afrin, a section of eastern Syria. There's still years of fighting left ahead. And Assad said exactly that in a speech commemorating the full liberation of the outskirts of Aleppo just 2 days ago.
Okay, Mark, we'll pick you up next week.
Great. Thanks for having me, Don.
Thank you. And that's all the news we have for you right now.
For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.